Meet
BT.
What are we fighting over today?
We got some Cardinals tickets, my man.
Ooh.
Sunday, August 25th, the Cardinals wrap up their series with the Rockies, and that day, 30,000 fans ages 16 and older will take home a replica of the 1944 World Series championship ring. And guys, it's just like the ones that the players and coaches received 75 years ago. Tickets are on sale at cardinals.com/promotions.
All right. Thank you, Meat. All right. Let's bring in today's fighter, yesterday's winner. It's Derek. What's going on, Derek? How are we doing today?
Hey, Brad. Pretty good.
You, how did yesterday's win feel? I mean, you beat him pretty bad. It was 4-2, I think. It feel good?
Yeah, feels good. Feels good to get under Randy's skin a little bit.
All right, good. You know, just know this. If you can carry that into the weekend, if in fact you win again today, he will seethe over that for 48 hours. Like, easy, right, Ron?
Yeah, I mean, and I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I'm okay with it, too. Randy's got everything going for him. He can be upset about this.
Yeah.
So we're counting on you, Derek.
I'll give my best shot.
Here we go. Question number one. On this date in 1988, Wayne Gretzky was traded from Edmonton to the LA Kings. What year did LA trade him to the Blues? Was it in 95, 96, or 97?
I think that was 95.
Question number two. In 1987, the Cardinals traded Andy Van Slyke, Mike Dunn, and Mike Lavalier to the Pirates. Who did the Cardinals get in return? Was it Tony Pena, Jose Oquendo, or Dan Dreesen?
Tony Pena.
Question number three, Derek. On this date in 2002, Barry Bonds hit his 600th career home run. How many members are in the 600 home run club? Is it 7, 8, or 9?
Let's go 7.
And question number four, the Cardinals are hosting the Pirates this weekend in Peter Pan. You went pirate mode.
Yeah.
Kinda.
It's a theme, kind of, right?
Okay. I see it working. Yeah. In Peter Pan, what is the name of the group of companions that helps Peter against Captain Hook and his pirates?
Jeez.
Is it the Lost Boys, the Mouseketeers, or the Forever Boys?
Let's go Forever Boys.
I gotta tell you.
I'm shocked.
Yeah.
Let's bring in Randy. Derek, how you feeling?
So-so.
Okay. All right.
This is going to be fun.
Yes. Yeah, it's going to be great. It's going to be
really
excited. Me too. Overall, I think it's a good fight. That last one, I didn't read. Sometimes I should read these questions before we actually read them on air, but
I usually just
look
at mine.
The real shock is more fun.
Yeah, I think so too. I just look at mine.
Yeah. Oh, that's good.
Usually about 1 second before I read it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Randy, say hi to Derek.
Hey, Derek, how you doing?
Pretty good. How are we doing, Randy?
Good. Thanks for listening. Thanks for playing.
All right, here we go, Randy. Just a straight-up fight. Nothing being pulled here.
No funny business.
There's funny business.
I don't think so. We suck at poker here. Mm. Question number one, Randy. On this date in 1988, Wayne Gretzky was traded from Edmonton to the LA Kings. Mm-hmm. What year did L.A. trade him to the Blues?
1996, February of 96.
All right, question number two. In 1987, the Cardinals traded Andy Van Slyke, Mike Dunn, Mike Lavalier to the Pirates. Who did they get in return?
They got Tony Pena, catcher, from the Pirates.
Question number three, Randy. On this date in 2002, Barry Bonds hit career home run number 600. How many members are in the 600 home run club?
Let's see. You've got Barry. You've got Hank Aaron. You've got Babe Ruth. Those are the 700. And then you've got A-Rod, Albert, Griffey, Tommy, and I think you've got 9. I'll go with 9.
All right, and question number 4. The Cardinals, as you know, Randy, are hosting the Pirates this weekend in Peter Pan, Randy.
Uh-huh.
In Peter Pan. What is the name of the group of companions that helps Peter against Captain Hook and his pirates?
I have never watched a pirate movie. I didn't know Peter Pan was a pirate movie, and I've never seen Peter Pan.
Captain Hook? You didn't know about Captain Hook?
No.
Oh.
What? So I'll use the lifeline.
Well, you've got the Lost Boys, the Mouseketeers, or the Forever Boys.
Well, it's not the Mouseketeers. So I will go with the... I think Peter Pan might be like a Forever Boy, so I will go with the Forever Boys.
The hell is wrong with you people? We got a winner.
Wasn't Peter Pan a little boy?
Yeah, I mean, he was kind of a boy, but all right.
Well, that's Tinkerbell.
Hey, Derek, he got you. 3-1. It was 1996 that the L.A. traded Wayne Gretzky to the Blues. Tony Pena was acquired in 1987 when the Cardinals traded Andy Van Slyke, Mike Dunn, and Mike LaValliere to the Pirates. Nine members are in the 600 home run club. Randy named off every single one of them except for Sammy Sosa. So if you had a side bet on that, you might have won. No, you didn't. Oh. And I was writing him down as
I
you were doing.
You actually
I got a check mark.
I said it in my mind. I didn't say it out loud.
Well, that's a problem for Mike Ryder, not us. And it is the Lost Boys. It is the Lost Boys that helped Peter Pan against Captain Hook and his pirates like Smee. Derek, thanks for playing, man. Try again. Have a great weekend.
All right. Thanks, guys.
All right, thanks, Derek. Good to have you with us on 101 ESPN, where it's 4:12. Your time check brought to you by Clarkson Jewelers, an officially licensed Rolex jeweler.
You know, when I think of the Lost Boys, I'm thinking of Kiefer Sutherland.
Good movie.
Yeah, that's that.
That's why I thought it was Forever Boys, because I thought the Lost Boys was a different thing.
The Forever Boys are probably a boy band.
Okay.
Are they?
No, I don't know.
Mike shook his head, yes.
Oh, they are? Oh.
Forever
are
Boys?
The Forever Boys a boy band?
I think he was shaking his head for something else.
Okay.
Probably because he lost money on Randy.
That's true, he did.
Picked the wrong pony.
I apologize for that, Mr. Ryder. Next time I'm gonna name them all out loud.
Great, I'll probably have your back on that one.
Next up, Cardinal fans are losing their minds right now with the thought of missing the playoffs for a fourth consecutive year. Are the high expectations valid for the BFIB, or are we simply spoiled? That's next on 101 ESPN. That is Boston-based comedian Josh Wolf this morning on the Kevin Wheeler Show here on 101 ESPN. And as Josh Wolf grew up, the Red Sox didn't win any World Series. The Patriots didn't win any Super Bowls. The Celtics were great during the course of the 80s, but between the late 70s and 2011, the Bruins didn't win any Stanley Cups. So he actually did have to suffer, and now he's got a kid who, if you are 25 years old in Boston, you think that Boston does own the sports world.
If you're Tommy Freeze Pops.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
you are insufferable.
Isn't he?
Yeah,
we win everything. Now, that being said, I try not to hold it against somebody that's all they know. Like, if that's life for you, that's life for you. It is what it is. You lucked out. You won the sports lottery of life, if in fact that's what you're dealing with. And I try not to take any fandom away from something like that, but I really do believe that true fans of something know pain. True fans know heartbreak, and true fans continue to show up for all of those things, even if you know that's likely what you're going to get every single year is pain and heartbreak like the Blues did forever.
And
that's what you were going to get.
That's why I always reference the 70s, because when I became a baseball fan in about 1970, that was right after the Cardinals' good run in the 60s, and there were a lot of people that preceded me by just a few years that had that same level of expectation. The Cardinals won in 64 and 67, went to the World Series in 68, and you had that feeling that, oh, this is just the way it is. When I was a kid, you could go to Busch Stadium 2, and they had what was called, they still have it in Illinois, the Redbird Express. My mom would take me to Northwest Plaza. I would get a $2 round-trip ticket to ride the Redbird Express to Busch Stadium at home. I could get a $1 bleacher ticket, but it was better to get the $2 general admission tickets, which were the top seven rows of the stadium, because by the third inning, you could be in the fifth row behind home plate because nobody was going to games because the team was so bad. And if you are 25 in St. Louis now, if you're 30 in St. Louis now, you don't understand that the Cardinals not only were not always great, but the BFIB was not always the BFIB. They used to draw, well, We can go back to Willie McGee's first game. Cardinals had the best record in the National League or in the National League East in 1981 in a split season. They came back in 82 with a really good team, and in May they were in first place, and they brought up Willie McGee. There were 14,000 people at the game. And that's the way it was. The way it is now is completely different. And to, like you talk about with Boston fans, BT, to defend those people, the Cardinals built those expectations. When the Cardinals say it's unacceptable for us to miss the playoffs 4 years in a row, how are we supposed to think?
Well, you know that the Cardinals would have it no other way, right? Like, that's how they want. That's where they want the bar to be set.
The last thing you want is apathy.
Yeah, for sure. Like, you want people to be disappointed because they're disappointed. And I know that you can easily say, well, if you're so disappointed, make a trade. Valid. You know, fine. It is what it is. At this point, I wonder, though, when it comes to, Randy, like you were talking about, being able to buy those tickets, knew you'd be able to just sneak down. Do you think that we would ever see that happen again here?
I think it'd take a strike, and it did happen.
So?
Yeah, it did happen in the 90s after the strike in 95. But I think that's what it would take. But now the Cardinals have done a brilliant job of making going to a Cardinal game more than just going to a game. It's a social event, and it's a brilliant way for them to go about their business. And people, when the Cardinal schedule comes out, schedule vacations and family reunions around Cardinal baseball. I don't think that's going to change. I think June, July, and August are going to be the same. There might be some local fall off, but once again, they have a winning record every year, and there's the Cardinals ownership is going to provide hope at the beginning of every season.
What it would take to get people to stop going regularly, regardless, is if they did go through probably, I'd say, 5 to 10 years of not just missing the playoffs, but being average or worse. You know, if you have a team that's missing the playoffs every year, but also doesn't look particularly good doing it, you can have a lot of people stop going. But in order for them to get down to like 14,000 per game, that would take 15 years of just being awful.
Now,
that would take, and I don't see that coming
for
them.
You'd be rebuilt by then, wouldn't you?
Yeah. You should be.
The current model. Yeah.
Season tickets are really expensive now, and with the new tax laws in place, you don't get any deductions for buying season tickets as a company. As far as I understand, there are no entertainment deductions anymore. So that's one thing that could affect it, is that corporate support that the Cardinals have always enjoyed might go away simply because it's not a tax advantage for companies anymore.
Yeah, I could see that. Now going back to the overall premise of being a spoiled sports fan or being one who has been diehard for something all the time, how do you guys feel about people that randomly jump around with their fandom? How do you feel about somebody who's like, you know what, I'm into the Colts this year. The Colts are my thing. Or I pick a random college. Like, all of a sudden, I'm a big Clemson guy right now. The bandwagon one bothers me a tiny bit if you're just jumping on every first-place team. If you pick a random crappy team in the middle of the pack, go for it. Go crazy on that one.
I don't think you could call yourself a true fan of a team if you do that.
I bet they do when they jump right in, like after they jump into it and they're around people that don't know any better.
Well, that would be irritating to me. But if you just decide, hey, I'm going to follow the team that is fun to watch because this ultimately is entertainment, it's supposed to be fun to watch. And if you decide you do that, then okay, you do that. But you can't say you're a true fan if that's what you're doing.
No, if you're jumping around. That being said, a lot of people here, when the football Cardinals left after the 1987 NFL season, became Chiefs fans because the Chiefs were good, and they've remained Chiefs fans. I can't tell you how many people I've come across that are in the 40 range right now that when the football Cardinals were gone became Buffalo Bills fans because they went to those four straight Super Bowls. But as bad as the Bills have been, they've maintained that fandom. So I admire that. That's like staying
a
Blues
fan. Too.
Yeah, that is kind of cool. I was telling you, Randy, before the show, I wish I had like a college team that I rooted for, that like I like truly cared about. I don't have it. And I want to be able to jump in somehow, some way, but I don't even know how to do it. Yeah, I mean, but they're tough to follow, really. I mean, here in St. George, Utah, the news doesn't travel fast, and they're
Pony
not playing
Express.
Any juggernauts, really. You know, it's going to be a little bit tough. I want one, though. I want a college team. I want an atmosphere. I just don't know how, like, I don't know how you get something like that if you didn't, in fact, go to one of those schools. Like, my wife tries to get me. She went to Vanderbilt, and then she went to Texas. So those are two decent choices.
Yeah, you just would have had to have grown up.
Yeah, but either I didn't go market. There. I didn't
right.
do any
so
of that.
So it's hard to get into but, it late in life.
I married your degrees.
Yeah, exactly.
My fandom of Mizzou, you talk about growing up, because when I would work in the yard with my dad as a kid on Saturday afternoons in the fall, that's what we listened to.
Right.
And that's how I became a Mizzou football fan. And so, yeah, I think it is difficult if you didn't either grow up with a team, and that's the only state Division I team in Missouri anyway, or you didn't go to a school. But that's the one attachment that will never go away either, because you aren't going to have any colleges move.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter what they do. You can be frustrated with them, but I know a lot of Mizzou fans that they went through that 13 consecutive non-winning seasons at the University of Missouri and state. You have to stay a fan if you're a grad, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's for sure. We got a couple of texts, by the way. Isn't Brad a UNLV fan? Then got another one, 90 running Rebels. Yeah, that was a long time ago. They were good back then. They were fun. It was Tarkanian, and the place was fantastic. It was Larry Johnson, Stacey Ogman, Greg Anthony, Moses Scurry. Those guys were awesome. They were. Anderson Hunt. Ain't so fun anymore.
We talked about this a little before.
But that's fandom, right? I'm not a true fan.
Yeah, do you wish that you had that for some team?
Yes. Yeah, I don't have that at all. I don't have that at all.
Because we talk about
that. I have
that
on something I'm gambling on. That's about it.
You're a Cardinal for life. You played for him, you know? But I don't.
A loss doesn't ruin my day.
Exactly. But for a lot of people, it does when they grew up with it.
I'm jealous of that, kind of.
Are you? See, I can't decide.
I'm jealous of it and confused by it at the same time, to be totally honest with you. There are some people like that are down in the dumps about stuff. Like, the hell is wrong with you?
Because you have to think about it. It's something you shared with your family, with your dad, with your friends, your mom, whatever, from the time you were like 6 years old. So you've invested so much into it emotionally. I think that sometimes I wonder if that's even good.
See, but the strike conversation makes a ton of sense to me. Like, that's where I could see like that being making you so angry that you don't want to go back because of all that stuff that you're talking about that you commit to.
Yeah. My frustration, and this is our job, is the uneducated fan. The people that say, oh, they don't care about winning. They don't want to spend any money. But they have the sixth highest payroll in the game. And it's our job to educate. Because we do this every day. We're supposed to know this stuff. But find another reason to be outraged other than they don't spend enough money. Because there are 23 teams below them with lower payrolls in baseball. And many of them have better records. So there are other reasons for the Cardinals not to win aside from not having a high enough payroll.
If you want to make an argument, which I think is a good argument, that they take the wrong kinds of risks, that they'll spend money,
legit.
But they spend it on, it seems like, the wrong stuff too much. And I wouldn't say Paul Goldschmidt is a bad investment. That's a good investment. I do that 10 times out of 10 without even thinking twice about it. But it's the other stuff.
If you want to say they should spend smarter, you have a great argument. But if you want to say they aren't spending enough, I can't buy it.
They could probably spend...
They've got a higher payroll than the Astros do. Well, actually, after the Greinke trade, the Astros passed him now.
Yeah, but yeah, that's not one. That's not one of the reasons.
No, it's
you could be upset about inaction if you want to at the trade deadline. I understand that, and you could be upset about some of the contracts that might be hamstringing you currently. I get that too.
It's a more nuanced argument because people either want to say you're a cheap organization or you're not, and I don't think they're cheap. I do think they probably could commit a little bit more, but I still don't think they're a cheap organization. I think they could spend a tad more than they do based on the revenue, based on the amount of people that come into the ballpark every single year. And I think that's a huge thing. Most people are looking at the attendance, and they see what the paid attendance is every single day and every single night, and they see they are only second to the Dodgers. And they think, you know what? If we're doing this, I want a little bit better. And I think that's okay. And that's totally fair.
And that
for
goes
me.
Back to the season ticket holders. But there is one other team that is offering $6 and $7 tickets. One, and that's the Tampa Bay Rays that is offering $6 and $7
people
tickets.
People still aren't coming.
I think there are other teams.
The Yankees and the Mets and the Astros, they aren't offering $6 and $7 tickets to their fans.
Randy, I would have to go back and look, but I do believe there are multiple teams that do like the game pass kind of thing. I forgot what it is, the Cardinals, where you pay a certain amount for like the month. And you
other
get
teams do
room.
That, but the Cardinals regularly are offering tickets in the $5, $6, $7 range.
I guess the question is, do they do that if in fact do they do it because they feel like they need to or because they want to? You know what I mean?
I think the Cardinals want. I think they're proud of the attendance, but that doesn't necessarily equate to higher revenue.
It's also nice to be able to get everybody involved and have games where you're able to do so. So, and I think in baseball more so than any other sport, just due to the amount of dates that you have, you can do stuff like that.
And me just told me in my ear that, for example, the Royals, over the course of the next month, their cheapest ticket is $11. And if you're subscribed to the Cardinal emails, you, like me, you know that every week you're getting a dynamic deal of $5 or $6 or $7 tickets.
The dynamic pricing, I do know for a fact, is pretty common around baseball. I just don't know how many teams are doing it.
It's the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN. Nearly every sports entity in the world is finding a way to embrace sports gambling, but can you guess which one isn't? That's next on 101 ESPN. At CBSSports.com, our friend Dennis Dodd writes, the NCAA has turned the College World Series into a craft brew festival. It has lessened the penalties for marijuana use. The association has booked the likes of Bruce Springsteen, the Chainsmokers, and Kings of Leon for its final four concerts. Just when it seemed like the NCAA had become millennial hipsters, amateur sports Big Brother went old school. It drew the line at gambling. Actually, the line was already drawn. The NCAA Board of Governors on Wednesday reaffirmed its stance on sports wagering. No legal or illegal gambling on professional or college events, including fantasy leagues, office pools, brackets, etc. No national injury reports. Dodd writes that it seemed things were beginning to change for the better before Wednesday. This after sources have been telling CBS Sports for months that the NCAA's walls surrounding gambling were about to come tumbling down. Clearly, they have not and apparently will not in the near future. And I wonder why.
Well, let's start with the first one, the no legal or illegal gambling on professional or college events. Now, this includes fantasy leagues, office pools, and brackets, as you mentioned. Now, this is for players, staff, anybody that's around the team, right? Yeah. There is no gambling whatsoever. I do think that in a situation like this, you could definitely loosen the reins and just say, hey, you can't gamble on us or you can't gamble on our sport, like no college football. You're a grown up. You do whatever you want. If you're 21 years old and you could do some legal gambling, I say do that. I think it's crazy to me that a kid can't play in a fantasy football league for money and you could actually get in trouble for something like that. Like, that is nuts. But I do totally understand the idea of you not wanting to, just like every other sport, by the way. You can't gamble on your sport. Like, that's a thing.
Right.
I understand that part of it.
I would, maybe this is a bit of a stretch, but I don't think you should gamble on your own sport. And I'm not sure that if you were in college as a basketball player, maybe you shouldn't be allowed to gamble on football either.
I agree with
because,
that.
Because you might have friends. You know, maybe your friend is the quarterback of the other team. And I know this
And he's a little banged up, he's not going to be on the injury report. That's not going to happen.
Exactly. Like, that's the kind of stuff you probably shouldn't be allowed to get involved in. But who cares if a college kid is involved in a football pool of some kind, a Super Bowl squares, or if he's playing fantasy football or betting on games throughout the season? Why would I care about that?
And I think to take it a step further, if a college basketball player is not in the NCAA tournament, why shouldn't he be allowed to have an NCAA tournament bracket? Unless you're playing in it, why? And even if you are playing in it, why can't you do what everybody else in America does?
Yeah, stuff like that doesn't bother me, but it's the NCAA, once again, just trying to make sure they encapsulate everything and
overkill.
Are overarching. Yeah,
yeah.
That's what they do. Now, the other part of this is still interesting to me. It's the no national injury reports. And the reason that the injury reports came out in the first place in the NFL was so everything's on the up and up, that there's not the inside information that is out there. Now, we realize that injury reports, that's not going to stop it's not going to stop somebody from trying to skim points.
Right.
Like, if somebody wants to do that and there's enough money out there, people can do that, all right? College kids can do it. Professionals can do it. But the injury reports, at the very least, helps the inside information. And the inside information is something now. You have sports gamblers, you have handicappers that, like, focus on one team or one division, and they know freaking everything. And they're scouring the internet. They're going to Twitter. They're finding, like, everything that they can find out about a team so they can get an edge and create a little bit of an edge there. The injury reports to me, if in fact they're out there, I think that that actually helps the sport. And I think that it helps people from trying to dig in and get more information and get closer to these guys than you'd want them to.
And be able to manipulate them.
Correct. Yes. And you can never stop that, okay? You're never going to be able to stop that, especially in college sports,
because
by the way.
They're not getting salaries.
Yeah, well, and in college sports, too. And at CBS Sport, Dennis Dodd links an article to, and I always get this guy's last name wrong, Michael, is it Francisi, Randy, or Friends?
I thought that was it, yeah, Francisi.
The old mobster who used to fix games.
And they hired him, yeah.
Yeah, and so he's working with that and trying to figure out, you know, how they stop that. But he said, basically, look, if you attach yourself to a guy that's not going to the league and you can tell him, you know, he's still got to be an impact guy on a team. But if he's not going to the NFL or the NBA, I say, hey, how'd you like to have $70,000, $80,000 in your pocket by the end of this?
Right.
Then there's nothing you can do about stuff like that. But overall, look, the gambling's going to happen one way or the other. So why not be as transparent as you possibly can?
It's a lot harder to get to a guy who's already making $1 million or so dollars,
way
or maybe
harder.
10 to 15 or 30. But when you're a college kid and you're not making that kind of cash, and I know we joke about some of the money some of the best players get under the table, it isn't NFL, NBA money. They're not doing well like that. So I think collegiate athletics does open itself up to that. And even when they're doing all of this, it's still never going to totally cut that out.
It's the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN. Coming up, we're all concerned about the Cardinals' fifth starter spot once they get past this string of off days. But what's the best option for them once they do need a fifth starter? We'll tell you who it is next in the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN. Cardinals will start Dakota Hudson in tonight's game against the Pittsburgh Pirates. It's the opener of a three-game series. And the Cardinals, fortunately for them, have some off days that they can deal with to avoid that fifth starter spot. But the question is, once you get back to having to use that fifth starter because you didn't do anything at the trade deadline, what's the best option? Michael Wacha got knocked around in L.A. He's not the only guy that has been knocked around or will get knocked around in L.A., but based on the year he's had, is he the best option? Are they better off having a guy like Daniel Ponce de Leon come back up? Today on the Kevin Wheeler Show, Kevin made the claim for using Ryan Helsley and Junior Fernandez in a combined role for the fifth starter.
I know that right away they're not going to deploy Junior Fernandez in high leverage. I actually think he might be a good guy to team up with Ryan Helsley as a tandem start for the fifth spot in the rotation when they get to it. They don't need it for a while, so they can kind of maybe give Fernandez a couple of appearances here and there, see how he does. I would love to see the fifth start essentially become Ryan Helsley and Junior Fernandez working in some form of tandem to get you through the first four, five, six innings.
Is the piggyback, as we sit here in August, a logical or doable thing?
Well, I do think that if you're going to do a piggyback, that Michael Wacha's got to be a part of it. Like, that's a guy that's built up to actually give you a lot of innings, and we do know when if he is on, then he can be on. But you have to be able to pull the trigger on him quickly if you have to, and you have to be able to give him the hook. So I do think that the piggyback at this point, I think that the piggyback is less crazy going into it, like knowing that, hey, I only need three out of you or something like that. I think that's less
three
crazy.
Three outs or three innings?
Oh, we'll go with innings. We're going to hope. I think that's less crazy going into it with that than it is saying, fingers crossed, hope this goes well. You know what I mean? So I could see that, and I would like to see Ryan help be a part of it, and I'm interested to see what Junior Fernandez has and what he looks like in multiple innings. But right now, the only problem with, and we're just saying Michael Wacha, you know, if he's a part of one of these things, or even if he's not, the problem is on days where you have a couple of guys designated to do that for a bullpen day, is what if it blows up early? What if both those guys blow up? Then all of a sudden you've got an entire bullpen that you've got to wear through, and you've got some innings to eat up. And I guess that you could run into that same problem any day. I mean, Flaherty, Michaelis, Waino, anybody could blow up at any time, I guess, and you just have to deal with it. And that's where you use the depth in your minor league system. But I just it's we're so used to this point of the year where the Cardinals always had that guy at AAA that they could just call and you expected something good to happen. Now, Daniel Ponce de Leon has had some really good moments and he's had some incredibly inefficient ones with the Cardinals. But the Austin Gomber injury hurt them badly.
Yeah,
and he's been gone for so long. And when we heard about the injury initially, it was like, oh, he's just going to miss a couple of starts. Mm-hmm. He's missed months.
Yeah.
You know, and this is a big issue for the Cardinals. And the fact that, you know, it's him, it's Reyes, they have nobody else. Like, who else is going to come up and do their thing? The name early in the season was Jake Woodford. He struggled more and more recently. And Jake Woodford's not the guy that's going to come in and save your season, most likely. I'm just used to having that guy ready at AAA.
And we should note Jeff Jones tweeting just a moment ago that Mike Schilt says the Cardinals' exam of Alex Reyes didn't reveal anything new in terms of structural damage, but the organization has encouraged him to get a second opinion from an outside physician. So that is good news if indeed there is no structural damage. The bad news is that he's still bothered by it.
Well, that's the thing. If they're suggesting that you go get a second opinion, he's obviously feeling like, no, there's something wrong. Like there's an issue and he's not trusting it and he's not going to... Reyes isn't going to help you this year. I mean, that's basically the be-all, end-all of that statement. Gomber's not going to help you this year. So who's going to help you? And the answer is it's somebody on this roster in some combination.
Right. Well, the concern for Reyes now is when does he help you next year, if at all? I mean, that's the point we're getting to now is when's he going to be available?
I don't think that you can go into any season and expecting Reyes to be a part of it.
No, we were just hoping. Yeah, Randy and I were talking about this exact thing on Wednesday, that if you're the organization, you plan as if he is not part of your organization.
Correct.
You go get what you think you need to help you out, help out the big league club during the regular season, and then if he becomes available for you magically during the middle of the year, great. Then you can throw him in, but you cannot count on him at all anymore.
When you are a team that fancies itself a playoff contender, and it's August 9th, and your fans are kicking around the ideas of openers or piggybacks, that's a real problem. That is, at least Tampa Bay, really good organization, good franchise, they plan for an opener. If the Cardinals go to an opener, it's going to be out of desperation.
Yeah, you're kind of what they're doing is throwing stuff at the wall and seeing if something will work. Yeah. And I do believe Mike Schilt has been asked in the last couple of days, whether or not he's open to the idea
of that.
He said
he's not close to it.
Yeah.
not close to the opener.
Right. So I guess it's possible, but he's not lined out how that would work. He hasn't said this is what we would plan to do. We were talking about Ryan Helsley, who each one of his outings, I think for the last 10 almost, they've all gone at least two innings.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So he can give you multiple innings. There's been a few times he's gone at least three, and I think once he's pitched into the fourth, maybe, at least three innings. But at any rate, he's able to give you multiple innings. It's just a matter of how they decide to do this. But I agree with you on Michael Wacha having to be part of that if that's the route they go.
Yeah, I hate the idea of the opener overall in baseball, but just looking at it as a fan of the Cardinals and wanting this organization to succeed, I hate the idea of going in every fifth day and not believing that you have a chance to win even more. So if that's where you get to with your fifth starting spot, whoever it is, whether it be Michael Wacha or Daniel Ponce de Leon, and you look at that every fifth day, it's like, oh, please, God, let this go okay. Well, then you got to try something else. Like, you can't continue to go out there and be a team that's in the middle of a division race having that feeling.
If it's your short-term plan for maybe a couple of weeks for whatever reason, injuries or what, it could be anything, fine. I can get by with that. I just don't think you as a team are going to be able to pull that off for 2 months and still expect a win. On that day, if you're giving up that day, and I'm not saying that piggybacking or having an opener on that fifth day is giving up that day's game, but it also means you don't feel like your options are great. So you're having to piece them together. You're having to piece innings together as best you can. That is not a good prognosis for almost 2 months of baseball.
Here's one of the other problems that you have with Michael Wacha. Whenever you decide to employ him, in his first innings, pitching in the first inning this year, his earned run average is 7.80. So teams kind of have an idea of what they're seeing against him. 3.60 in the second inning, and then in the third inning, 9.19. And then you look at pitch counts. His first 25 pitches in terms of success, he has a batting average against of .381. Pitches 26 to 50, it goes down to .307. Then 51 to 75, it goes to .271, the batting average against us. So, and then actually 76 to 100, it goes down to 152.
Just got to get there.
Yeah, he actually gets better.
So, and just looking at, and again, it's a small sample size when it comes to Michael Wacha, but he looked better out of the pen. Like, his stuff looked better this year than kind of easing into a start and trying to get deep into it. And I wonder if maybe that's the way that you do it. And I still think that he's going to have to eat up some innings for you, certainly. But maybe it is Helsley off the bat, and then he gives you two innings, and then you hand it over to Michael Wacha out of the pen, and you tell Michael, hey, let it eat. Like, go. Do your thing. Let it fly. Don't worry about innings. Just worry about getting outs. Like, one at a time, just go and see what you're able to get out of him there instead of, oh, I got to go six or I got to go seven. Like, screw that. Just go get outs, and then we'll figure it out. You pitch until I come take the ball from you is basically how the approach should be. At this point, I would be surprised if they don't try to get a little creative with it.
I don't think they have a choice. I mean, I think that's what you're with right here, because you don't have that fifth starter that you feel comfortable with every day. Getting creative is your only option here for the next 2 months, which is why it's so frustrating that this is what they're doing and this is what they left themselves with after the inaction at the deadline. This makes this terribly frustrating. Now, they can get through these next couple of months and maybe everything's going to be okay, but they just made the job so much more difficult for themselves.
Yeah, we got a text message in all caps, and then they did apologize for all caps, but they meant it. Just talking about essentially Carlos Martinez, and they're frustrated that he's not a part of this conversation and mad at the organization about it. It's my understanding that this is more of a Carlos thing than it is an organization thing. The organization would love Carlos to be starting for them. They'd much rather him be starting than being the closer, but my understanding is that he is not prepared to do so and doesn't feel good getting deeper and deeper into ball games.
And concerned about the physical?
Yeah. The shoulder fatigues after a couple of innings. That was the issue when they were coming back. They did all the strengthening, did everything. Once he hit a certain pitch count, it was like, oh, he didn't feel it anymore. So they're trying to get him for the sprint as opposed to the marathon. So I really think that they would love to have him a part of that mix, certainly right now with all the issues. Because I think that there are some other guys that you can look at and say, all right, well, we could try this in the ninth inning. Gallegos would be a guy right now. Like, he's swing and miss stuff. I'd give him a whirl in the ninth inning if, in fact, Carlos could get stretched out, but I don't think that he can.
And Fernandez had a bunch of saves down in AAA, too, so that would be another possibility. You can try that, but like you say, BT, right now, it seems like Martinez has to be the guy down there.
Yeah, and we were talking about Wacha pitching out of the bullpen and whether or not, and I thought so too. I mean, just on the surface, I thought he looked better pitching out of the bullpen. Maybe it's because he just looks awful pitching out of the rotation, but I thought he looked better out of the bullpen, and I'm looking at his numbers. The 1.93 ERA is really good. His peripherals are not great, though, in his last, let's see, so it would be his last 3 weeks as a reliever, as he's pitching out of the bullpen. The average against him is .316 with a slug of .526. That's not particularly good. Even though the ERA is low, I don't know what you're going to get out of him. I don't feel comfortable, and I think that's the bottom line. I do not feel comfortable with him starting games for them right now.
It's kind of sad. He just turned 28 years old. He should be in the prime of a really good starting career because he was unbelievable. Yep. In 2013 and 2014, and actually
he was great last year.
Yeah, in 2015, before he fatigued down the stretch, he was great. Yeah, and it's been a guy that has, until now, when he's been healthy, he's been a pretty good pitcher. But now appears healthy, but not pitching well.
So just going on the appearance thing, by the way, he looks different to me. He looks different than he did last year. The fastball is not coming downhill. The changeup nowhere near as nasty. To me, it's a small thing, but his arm is down a tiny bit. His hand's on the side of the ball as opposed to on top of it. And I'm sure that he's looked at video too. I'm sure that he's seen this and be like, oh, yeah, that's different. Pitching coaches have said, hey, this is what's a little bit different. To me, it's a more physical element of, can he even get to that position anymore?
That position was really unusual. It was just so over the top.
The head was sideways, and the arm was way up, and now the arm's a little bit down, and you just don't get the same movement on the ball. So the fastball doesn't
have neck massage, and he's good.
You think that's all it is?
That's a great idea.
Maybe the chiropractor that we spent some time talking about yesterday. Yeah, get a little work
there's
done.
There's a play.
Open that thing up.
Yeah.
Small adjustments, but they can be maddening in baseball and impossible to get to sometimes.
That's right.
toss that one out there as a possibility tonight on the Cardinal pregame show on FS Midwest.
Can do. And will do.
You're headed out there right now, right?
Yes, I will be there. Gentlemen, it was fun this week. I had a blast.
Yeah, we'll be
see
back
you next
at
week.
It. Yeah, by the way, we are at Dave and Buster's on Monday.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to start the Blues Caravan, so we'll see you at Dave and Buster's.
Yeah, we're
going to
play some games, too.
Be awesome.
Yeah, I like that
Great.
Place.
We'll see you later, buddy.
All right, see you guys.
That is BT. He's going to head out, Ronj and Randy, for the second half of the show. And have you ever heard of a standing ovation during a preseason football game? That's next before Take It or Leave It on 101 ESPN.